You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Today we're talking about the US midterm elections, as millions of electors are expected to have cast their votes for this election, which is currently pretty much ending. So it's been 2 years after the election of Donald Trump as president of the United States. So the voters are voting to renew members of the Congress, which is made of two parliamentary chambers, the House of Representatives and the Senate. Now, the House has got 435 seats, and they all will be renewed by the end of this election, whilst only a third of the Senate's 100 seats are up for election. And currently, the Republicans have immense control over the country's politics. Not only does the president represent the Republican side, but they also have a majority at both the House of Representatives and the Senate, and conservatives also majorly feature in the Supreme Court. So that gives great latitude to Donald Trump to pass most of the bills that he desires to see pass. But this election could change that, as Massey professor and American expat Ted Zorn explains.
A midterm election is usually framed as a referendum on the party in power. And I think that's certainly the case this time. We have a country that's very divided, especially on their views of the president. And I think that will play a huge role in both in terms of the energy on both sides and the turnout, and ultimately in the results that we'll see. So beyond the referendum on the party in power, there are very practical consequences of an election like this, because currently in the U.S. the Republicans hold both branches, the executive branch, which is the president, as well as both houses of Congress, which is the administrative branch, with majorities in both the House and the Senate. So in that system, when a bill is passed into law, both houses of Congress have to approve the bill, and then the president signs it off. So if one house is controlled by a different party, it makes things much more difficult to get major pieces of legislation through.
Yes, this means the result of these midterm elections could actually make it much harder for Donald Trump to stick to his policy agenda. And classically, in instances of shared power, little gets done in terms of national policies, and the whole process gets gridlocked until the next presidential election. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I did a little presentation of these midterm elections and what people are voting for, so I'm not necessarily going to go into as much detail this time. But just so you know, as it stands, the Republicans hold 235 seats out of the 435 available in the House of Representatives, while they have 51 out of 100 seats in the Senate. So the Democrats technically only need to gain two seats in the Senate to have a majority. However, out of the 35 Senate seats that are up for election this year, 26 already belong to the Democrats, and 10 of them are actually contested, as they're in states that voted for Donald Trump in 2016. So not only do the Democrats have to defend these seats, but to win, they would have to gain ground in states that are considered a long shot, like Arizona, Texas, or Nevada. So Professor Zorn doubts this scenario will happen.
Well, I think up until a couple of months ago, there was a lot of talk about a blue wave, that Democrats would win a massive victory like they did in 2008 on the coattails of Barack Obama, and that the Republicans did 2 years later in 2010. But I think now there's a lot less certainty. Based on the polls, it seems most likely that the Democrats will win back the House, and that the Republicans will hold on to a majority in the Senate and possibly even add to their lead. Nate Silver, who is sort of the guru of statistical modeling on elections, says there's about an 85% chance of each of those things happening. Democrats take the House, and Republicans hold on to the Senate. But if you're comfortable with 85% odds, those are also just about the odds that he gave to Hillary Clinton winning in 2016.
Yeah.
So I think everything will depend on the voter turnout. And what we're seeing so far is a massive early turnout of the vote, not quite twice as much as was in 2014, but close to that. So, I mean, these aren't, you know, we talk about high voter turnout in the U.S. It's not New Zealand-like turnout. We're used to 75 to 80% voter participation in New Zealand. It would be a very high turnout in a midterm election if 45% of the eligible people voted for in the election. But when you get a high turnout, and that would be considered a high turnout, and that's very likely, Democrats will usually have an advantage when there's very high turnout, just because there are more people who identify as Democrats. But Republicans usually have an advantage in the midterms overall. So you've got two fired up sets of voters, as well as independents, who seem to be leaning towards Democrats, but it will be really interesting to see what plays out.
It's very much open still.
I think the Democrats they've got a long row to hoe in terms of winning the Senate back, just because there are so many seats that they have to defend, where there's an incumbent Democrat who is competing in a state that Trump won. Mm. The Republicans don't have to defend those. So the Democrats would have to have an amazing night to win back the Senate, and that doesn't seem that likely, but you never know.
As Professor Zorn mentioned, the early turnout has actually been rather impressive for this midterm election. 35 million ballots have already been cast, while there were only 21 million in 2014. And that could play a significant role in key states like Texas or Nevada. Early voting has already surpassed 2014's total votes in these states, and there are five times more young voters than 4 years ago. So as the results start unfolding, some states will require particular attention.
Well, I think what I'm going to be watching for early on are a couple of things. Because of time zones and because of different state rules on what times polls close, one of the earliest results that I'll be watching is in Kentucky in the 6th Congressional District, which is generally very Republican-leaning. Trump won it by 15 percentage points in 2016. Mm-hmm. But this time it's considered a toss-up. You've got a very interesting candidate for the Democrats, Amy McGrath, who's a charismatic ex-fighter pilot, the first woman in the U.S. to fly an F-18 in combat, so quite a story there. Mm. And she's up against an incumbent Republican. Usually an incumbent Republican in a Republican district would have huge advantage, but that race is considered a toss-up. So that's one I'll be watching as a whether there's a chance of that blue wave. Then I would turn to Florida. So that we should start seeing those results just after noon New Zealand time.
Yeah.
When in Florida, just after 1 o'clock New Zealand time, you've got two very high profile races there. Also very close in the polls. Bill Nelson is the Democrat who's an incumbent in the Senate. And he has a very slim lead in the polls over Rick Scott, who's a very controversial current Republican governor in Florida. And then to replace Rick Scott in the governorship, you've got Andrew Gillum, who is an African-American, who's showing a slim lead over Republican Ron DeSantis, who positioned himself as a strong supporter. Texas is going to be very difficult for the Democrats to get, but again, one of those where there's huge early voter turnout, lots of more young people than usual. Young people don't typically vote in the midterms, and they would favor the Democrat. But the Democrat, at least in the polls, shows a pretty significant, he's pretty significantly down compared to the Republican Ted Cruz. There's also Tennessee would be another early sign in terms of the Senate. The Republican Marsha Blackburn is favored to win, but if the Democrat Phil Bredesen is able to win, that would be a very good sign for the Democrats.
So as it was mentioned earlier, the midterms tend to feel like a referendum on the president. Barack Obama suffered big losses during his midterms because U.S. citizens quite majorly rejected his political decisions. Donald Trump has tried to put the accent on illegal immigration, but voters seem to also be interested in topics like healthcare. Trump could benefit from a healthy economy, though. At the moment, the unemployment rate is actually very low and wages are on the rise. So what consequences could there be in case of a change of landscape? Well, if the Democrats take over the House of Representatives, they would be in a position to start an impeachment procedure as a majority is required. However, it seems unlikely the process will be able to go through, as there also needs to be a two-thirds vote at the Senate. If predictions are correct and the Senate remains red, then there's little chance of such a vote occurring. But the results of this election could have also a minor influence on foreign policy, trade and defence. These fields are more so in the hands of the president, but Democrats could have more power to pressure Trump. As Massey Professor and Director of the Centre for Defence and Security Studies, Ruben Azizian, explains.
If Democrats, of course, overwhelmingly win, there will be, of course, more pressure on Trump. And those areas where would be affected would be one, would be the defense budget.
Yeah.
Because Democrats think that Trump is spending too much and the unjustifiable spending, say, on the upgrade of the nuclear arsenal, providing too many arms sales to Saudi Arabia and supporting Saudi's air war against Yemen. So this is all that Democrats don't like to see, and they will put a lot of pressure and constraints. The other area where we'll see probably more pressure on Trump would be on the diplomacy side. Donald Trump is not very supportive of the role of diplomacy. he's the America First, pressure and all of that. So there are lots of vacant positions in the State Department and ambassador positions all over the world. He wanted to cut the State Department budget significantly. So the Democrats will push back and insist on enhancing role of diplomacy. So for New Zealand, I think the important one is we don't want wars, we want more diplomatic approaches. So Democrats gaining more influence would, I think, serve New Zealand interests. I'm putting aside ethical sides. I think most people in New Zealand hate Donald Trump kind of behavior, but I'm not talking about that, his personality issues. But I think we will see more tendency to be more of a diplomatic player in the world rather than this sometimes assertive, aggressive.
Because I guess that's the thing that people have to understand is that the president, the U.S. president, actually has great latitude in terms of foreign policy, and that the Congress has sort of a more minor role to play, and it's mainly like a national election, so that won't have that many consequences. It's more of a pressure thing than it is in terms of decision making.
Exactly, and there is still the power of executive orders, right? That presidents have, and they have a lot of leeway in foreign policy here. But it'll be more scrutiny and more pressure, and that would maybe kind of have an impact on Donald Trump and kind of in the space that he has to maneuver in the foreign policy and trade. But basically, I don't think we can expect very dramatic changes. I don't think there will be a return to TPP or CPTPP that is very valuable asset for New Zealand, because even Democrats, if you remember, Hillary Clinton changed her position on that and wasn't supportive of TPP. So, but overall, we don't know whether that's a good thing or not. If there's more pressure from Democrats but fewer results, that could lead to a little more instability, I would say, rather than a change of policy, and that is a problem. And there's some concerns that some of the Democrats have. If they say if Democrats win at least the House, and and they start the impeachment of Donald Trump, some Democrats think this will be a big mistake, and what it will do, it will distract Democrats from actually trying to do their real good job. So there is a split amongst Democrats. That's what my other point is.
Just one question about trade specifically.
Right.
Basically, the same thing, I guess, applies there as well, where it's like the president still has great latitude as well, and so it would be more about pressure, but the deals could still be made regardless. But maybe, is there any contentious... I was reading about how there's... especially the trade war kind of with China. Would that, I don't know, if the political spectrum changes with this election, would there be any changes in this field?
Yeah, that could be. And that could be because some sectors in U.S. are already hurting significantly, like the farming sector, because the counter tariffs by China and others are starting to hurt. And I think the Democrats are already picking that, and they could pressure administration on those issues and mobilize, the farmers and others. So we could see, that's what my other earlier point was, that more preference for diplomatic action rather than confrontational action, which is the case with the trade war, because I don't think anybody likes the trade war. Republicans don't like the trade war either, but Republicans have a problem of pressing their own president, whereas Democrats don't have that problem. And I think with the help of Republicans, indirect support, they could press Trump for more diplomacy versus confrontation with China.
All right, we'll just play a couple of ads and we'll be back right after.
The Wire.
The biggest part of success is perspiration.
A sunbeam through my prison.
No! Mum, the character's a box brownie. Stop acting like a Leica.
But it's nothing without that touch of inspiration.
I guess I'm taking this one solo.
A little light, a brief exposure. Is this a refraction or infraction on my heart?
Be inspired. Take your passion for photography to a whole new level with ProGear, unparalleled quality. At Free Railway Street, Newmarket, or online at progear.co.nz.
Sick shit, y'all.
Thanks.
Fresh threads, brosif.
Ta.
Hock it up, my dude!
Yeah?
Digging your cool, quirky style.
Jeez, just buy your own BFM t-shirt. Come on!
Want to get so many compliments it hurts? 95BFM is back in the merch game, baby. And right in time for Christmas. You've got until November 18th to grab a classic BFM shirt, a classic BFM bag, or a super slick, one-off, never-to-be-repeated BFM tee designed by local ace artist Chippy. Don't miss out. Go to 95BFM.com/merch. Discount with your Simplicity B card, thanks to smashing promotions and good old mate Chippy.
Why should New Zealanders care so much about this?
Because your children will curse you if you don't.
The Wire.
We're back talking about the US midterm elections. The first results are coming in now. It's very, very early to report on them, so I'm probably not going to do that. But you can expect some of them at least on the news on 95BFM this afternoon. But I kind of wanted to talk about, on top of the Senate and House of Representatives election, there's one that tends to be forgotten, which is the one for governors, which are pretty much the equivalent of the president, but at its state level. And so they have great power in their state in terms of regulations, but they also, one other power that they have is the power to redraw their voting district, or at least partake in the process. And that has an influence on the results, as these districts are drawn to sort of artificially gather certain populations conveniently together to in order to benefit a party. I don't really have much time to talk about this. It's called gerrymandering. It's been going on in the States for a very long time, so you can look it up on the internet. One thing, though, that I wanted to talk about is another way that you can artificially influence the results, and that is apparently quite frequent now in the United States, as voter suppression. Here is Professor Zorn on the topic.
It's happening in a number of ways. You may remember after the 2016 election, Trump said that that he would have won the popular vote if it wasn't for all the millions of illegal votes. But there's absolutely no evidence of that. He formed a task force to look into that, and it sort of quietly disappeared because there is no evidence of massive illegal voting. There have been a number of laws passed to that are specifically targeted at suppressing the voter ID laws being one. People showing up at the polls with a voter ID sounds like a very reasonable thing to do, but what happens is that people who are poor and non-white tend to be the group that is less likely to have a voter ID that is considered legitimate. There have been tightening of what kinds of voter identification is considered legitimate. There have been efforts to move voting places, the place where one votes, a way to make them more difficult for people in some of the cities to vote in. So, quite a lot of efforts, which has caused real problems for minority groups to be fairly represented, and also scrubbing of the voter rolls. That's one of the things that happened in Georgia, is that the attorney, through the efforts of the attorney general, who is now running for governor, there's been a systematic effort to look at the voter rolls and eliminate people who whose names, you know, maybe missing a hyphen in their name or something like that that don't match up. So a number of, and about 75% of those people removed from the roles were African American. So pretty depressing state of affairs, I'd say.
Speaking of depressing, the campaign seems to have been particularly negative and manipulative this year. In 2016, the world sort of discovered the power of social media in terms of spreading propaganda and wrong information. In 2018 is actually seeing a similar phenomenon. Twitter says it has removed around 10,000 accounts pretending to be party members and officials and targeting Democratic voters. And in just 2 months, May and June this year, the company suspended more than 70 million accounts. And it says it's removing up to 1 million accounts per day for violation of rules around misinformation and propaganda. So the battle is very much alive online. But it's also still active on traditional platforms like television, where you get attack ads that are as virulent as ever. And so I asked communications professor and American expat Kathy Strong to explain what these are.
Attack ads are a tradition in the United States. They've been used for a long time. And what they do is they don't say anything about their own candidate, what good they're doing or what they can do. They simply attack the other side. Sometimes they attack them for decisions they've made. Sometimes they attack them for their own family or personal situation. But there's nothing that says what the other candidate is doing better. So it's really very, very negative. This has been a tradition in the States for a very long time, but now with this election, it's become extremely vile and also, well, more than unethical, because most of the information is wrong. They Photoshop pictures of the oppositions in compromising positions or grotesque faces, or they just simply say wrong things about them. And they work. They actually sway voters. So anybody who's tried to do research on it says it does influence voters. So it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to vote for someone, but they're going to vote against someone. And usually the more attack ads for candidate A means there's more people who are going to vote for candidate B. It's not just attack ads, but advertising on these midterm elections here that are going on right now, which aren't even the really, really important ones, each party is spending about $20 billion each. So they're doing that because they do know it works.
There's no regulation around these ads in terms of being truthful.
It's really interesting to look at the regulations because, yes, there are some, but once they're out there, they're out there. So even though they're pulled back, enough people have seen them. Mm. A really, really interesting one that's just happened yesterday was that there's this really quite a toxic ad against the Democrats. It's a television one. It's about a Mexican immigrant who's come and he shot two police officers in the United States. And the ad says this is the Democrats' fault and the Democrats have let him in. Now, first of all, that's absolutely wrong. It was a Republican sheriff that actually allowed him to be free. And this was about 10, 15 years ago. But the ad also just grins up racism. So it's a very, very toxic ad and wrong. And the president of the United States tweeted it out. So he's supporting it, and which gets a lot of stuff. Now, it was on television, and all the television stations yesterday have refused to run it. So this is even the television stations that support the Republican Party. Mm. They all said this is too toxic, too racist. They wouldn't run it. That's unusual because, of course, they are earning a lot of money from these ads.
Who can make these ads? Are they made by candidates or just can they be made by whoever?
Anybody can fund these ads, absolutely anybody. And sometimes the candidate themselves has no idea. Mm. But obviously it can be just a person, but usually it's a group that is going to benefit by getting a particular party in power. A whole lot gets geared up 2 days, 3 days before the elections because it's too late to correct them, to counter them, or to check on them. And there's been a huge increase just, you know, in the last few days of some absolutely wrong stuff getting out there and being pounded on people who are trying to make up a decision at the last minute who to vote for. And so these ads are telling them who not to vote for, thereby pushing them over to the candidate that whoever is funding these ads are wanting them to vote for.
Since 2016 and Donald Trump being elected to office, and with his personal style of politics and rhetoric and how he speaks and how he behaves, do you think that that has also influenced the style of these attack ads?
With President Trump having such an aggressive manner and way of speaking, it has given that the okay for a lot of other people to speak like that. Absolutely right. I mean, the famous one is the politician who said he's going to stamp all over his competitor's face with golf spikes. I mean, that's not unusual. One in the very Democratic state basically said every Muslim should be shot. And this is okay to say, and getting a lot more traction because the president has made it acceptable and has got all the support for it, is that there's a new wave of culture where they want rough-talking leaders.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.